My first question is, are you good at keeping secrets? What do you think? I'm not very good at it. Andre Malraux said, man is not what he thinks he is what he hides. George Orwell said, if you want to keep a secret, you must also hide it from yourself. Benjamin Franklin said, three may keep a secret if two of them are dead. Does God like secrets? Apparently. He asks that we give just before him, so that our Father who sees in secret will reward us. And it's one of several subjects in the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus wants us to be discreet. Not to, here I come, I'm giving. Not to, this is a trumpet, you know. Here I come, I'm praying or fasting. But apparently a secret history with God is approved of. This week, Anita and I went to the 60th birthday party in black tie of a wonderful leader of a community called the Christian Life Center in Cowley, where Grady Reed's six brothers and sisters told the story of growing up with their older brother in humble circumstances as migrants, I guess, from the Caribbean in London. And all the stories they told, although they were hilarious, were about his generosity. We know Grady and Cindy well, we love them. Some of you will remember them leading worship at Love Oxford in Broad Street. Do you remember that? Yeah, amazing music, just fantastic people. I'd count them as friends in the city. But I didn't know any of these stories. They were secrets, you know, about buying clothing for his sister. His brother said that, you know, growing up in their community, if you wanted a new bike, you couldn't have one. You got a back wheel from the dump, you got a front wheel from a friend or something, you found a frame probably lying on the street and you tried to put it together and that was your bike. So when he said to his brother, I'd really love a bike for my birthday, and was given a brand new chopper bike, which was all the rage in those days, it was just amazing. His sister, older sister, older than the brother, talked how he had paid for her driving lessons. And another sister said that when she had had her driving lessons, Grady had bought her her first car. And then one of the other sisters said, I didn't know. She came over from Canada for this event, as did three of them. I didn't know that. He never gave me a car. Because these were secrets, and generous secrets. Don't let your right hand know what your left hand is doing. I wonder what you would like people to say about you at your 60th birthday. Now, I know there's a whole group of people who can't imagine ever having a 60th birthday, but it will come. And what would the legacy you would like to be given? I was just moved, really. By what we were seeing there, and this extraordinary man, really, who has bought, or at least hired for 10 years, a huge cinema called The Regal, or it was called The Regal, 300 Cowley Road. And then it was a bingo hall, and it could easily have become a mosque. That was the alternative. But it's a church in the middle of Cowley, full of heavenly music and the aroma of God, led by a man who knows about secret generosity. And it was a challenge to us and a really moving thing. Do you have a history, a secret history with God that's generous? Don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Don't be like the Pharisees who already had their reward, but lay up treasures in heaven, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you, apparently. Do you have any secret history with God? Like Hannah in 1 Samuel 1, who prayed to the Lord and her lips were moving and no sound was coming out. And she said, if you give me a son, a child, and if it's a male child, then I will lend him to the Lord for the whole of his life. He will be lent to the Lord. Eli comes along and says, put away your wine, you drunk woman. She says, no, I'm not drunk. I'm a poor woman pouring out her heart before God. And he says, go your way and may the Lord grant your request. And the Lord remembers her. And she gives birth to a little boy. Eventually, after years of barrenness, secret history before God, gives birth to a young little boy called Samuel. And Samuel, in the end, lays hands on, anoints David, from whose line comes the Lord Jesus. Secrets before God that are appropriate. I have some secret history with God, especially in terms of ministry change. And, you know, God, if you will do this, well, especially when we were living in Paris. But do we have a secret history of giving to God? And I think this is to do with a love relationship with God. You know, I'm bound to think that. And I'm happy to be speaking about it tonight on a day which isn't a gift day, where we need to raise £50,000 or something like that. We haven't got a target. We don't need to raise any money. So I'm not speaking about it in order to do that, because we ended the year in such a healthy way, thank God. So why am I speaking about it? I'm speaking about it in terms of discipleship, for your discipleship, for your blessing, for your reward and relationship. The Diocese of Oxford, in their wisdom, produced a little piece of paper on giving recently, which Jenny Corr, our Ops Director, handed me last week. And it says, 6 steps on our Christian journey. 1, survival. I give a bit when I'm asked because the church ought to be there in case I need it. You know, you might need the church one day, so you give a bit. Supermarket. I'm happy to pay towards the cost of the bits of church that I want and enjoy. Support. The work of the church is important, so I'll support it. I have a need for belonging. I see myself as a member of the supporters club, thirdly. 4, subscription. I see myself as a member and wish to contribute my fair share of the costs. I'm identifying, I'm playing my part. 5, submission. My understanding of being a disciple is that I should put God first in my life. Therefore, I give a part of my money to him. And lastly, 6thly, or at the top of the ladder, sacrifice. God gave his son Jesus to die for me, so I want to respond to his generosity with generosity. My Christian calling is to be Christ-like, and so naturally I give joyfully and sacrificially, following Christ. I wonder where on that journey you are. As I say, we're not preaching for money, God forbid, tonight. As I said, we had this extraordinary gift day last year where twice what we were looking for was given. And so we ended the year as well as I can ever remember ending the year. But Jenny Corr also produced a thing about gift days, and she's for pastorates. You may be in a pastorate which has looked at this already. If so, forgive me, but it just in case you haven't. She said, we had an amazing response to Gift Day in November, and 150 members of the congregation donated over £157,000. Praise God. So that must have been £1,000 each, I suppose, wasn't it? No. And it says, although a large number of people participated, almost half those gave an average of £30 each. In fact, 2/3 of the money was given from just 5 donors. The gift day allowed us to celebrate wonderful examples of generosity from families who'd recently received unexpected income and faithfully donated a tithe of that money above and beyond their regular giving. She says, we're under grace, not law. We just want to encourage everyone to respond to God's extravagant generosity. Not instructing people on how much to give. Each person should work it out prayerfully with God. So this is to do with discipleship. And the first thing I want to say, therefore, is it's to do with a love affair. It's a love gift. I'll just show a little clip from a movie called Love Actually.
A present only each tonight. Who's got one for Dad?
I am. Let Mummy go first.
Okay, I'll get it. I want to choose mine. I think I want...
Emma Thompson.
This one. I have, of course, brought to the tradition.
Receiving her gift.
Well, but this is my other...
Alan Rickman.
Personal one.
Giving it. Anyone seen this?
That's a real first.
She has looked in his pocket
for
the keys and found a piece of jewellery, and she thinks that's what he's giving her.
God, that's a surprise.
What is it?
It's a CD. Joni Mitchell, wow.
To continue your emotional education.
Yes. Goodness. That's great.
My brilliant wife.
Ah, yes. Actually, do you mind if I just absent myself for a second? All that ice cream. Darling, could you make sure the kids are ready to go?
All right, I'll be back
in a minute.
Alan Rickman has in fact given a gold chain to his PA, who is seen here.
The dizzy dancing way that you feel.
And Emma Thompson is left wondering about her husband's adultery, or certainly thought adultery.
But now it's just another show. And you leave them laughing when you go. And if you care, don't let them know.
So,
don't give yourself away. I've looked at love from both sides now, from give and take, and still somehow.
So Emma Thompson is devastated. And plays this incredibly famous scene brilliantly. Why is it so tender? Well, it's irony. It's an adulterous gift has been given, and there's this tragic, tender scene. We'll just fade that out now, if I may.
Feeling proud.
So, God is a divine lover. Your maker is your husband, Isaiah 54. Yet how many gifts of love do we give him in secret? You know, we had a significant wedding anniversary last year, me and my wife, and I spent time really trying to get a great present secretly. How many gifts do we give him in secret that are sacrificial, generous, and as to him? And how much money do we spend adulterously? James 4:4, you adulterous people, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? And this joins chapter 6, verse 24. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. So it is a love affair, in my opinion, and I pray that it would be imparted to us tonight, divine revelation. In contrast to Alan Rickman, Mary pours out perfume at the feet of Jesus. Costly perfume worth a year's salary, worth £24,000 if that's what you're earning, or 15 or £120,000. Pours out, and Judas says, why this waste? That could be given to the poor. He said that not because he cared about the poor, because he kept the money purse and was a thief. And Jesus said, no, because she has anointed my feet for burial. And wherever this gospel is heard, this story will be told. And I dare say that perfume still perfumes the world, a love affair, really. And what is your smell? What do you smell of is the question. I don't want you to necessarily discuss it, but because the Bible says we are the aroma of Christ. So this is also tender, really. Coco Chanel said, a woman with no without perfume has no future. She had a vested interest, but you could say a church without perfume has no future. And that's the first thing, it's a love affair. Given in secret, not reconciled, not recognized by people. And I've seen this love affair sometimes, you know, when we moved to Paris. It was a very poor church, 26 people in the first service we served there, and after a while it filled up and there weren't any loos, so we had to build some loos in the courtyard and put in this place in the centre of town, and the estimate came in, because a friend in the church was going to do the work, £18,000 for 3 loos from nowhere, and we got permission to do it. And I said to the treasurer, what do you think? He said, well, it's never going to happen. And then on the day of the gift day, all the money came in. And I said, it's amazing. He said, it's not amazing, Charlie. It is a miracle. You know. And then I remember the day when we had 3 people, 3 loos. We had a sort of tape across them, and we snipped the tape and they went in and used them for the first time. It was just amazing. It may seem a bit odd, but c'était Paris. And then I remember coming here and inheriting a debt of £1 million when I became the rector of this church to pay for that glass entrance, which we love and enjoy. Did you know it cost £1 million? Why? Because it all had to be done. All these arches are brand new, and it's just very expensive. Glass work and all of this that you're sitting in costs £3 million, the refurbishing of this church. No more seats, but just a place where, you know, you can have parties and Alpha and all this sort of thing. And I remember the day when the last penny of that £1 million of debt came in, and we uncorked champagne bottles. And I did not know who had given the money, because I don't know in this church who gives the money. It's hidden from me in case it colours my judgment of people. But it's a very important thing. So as I say, I don't know the giving of this church. I don't want to know. I'm not like the chap. I often tell the story of 2 people, forgive me if you've heard this before 100 times, but shipwrecked on a desert island, and one is absolutely terrified and the other is just lying there sunning himself and swimming. And one says, what on earth is the matter with you? We're going to die. He says, don't worry. I tithe $10,000 a month. I am at peace. And he says, well, what's that got to do with it? We're going to die. Oh! And he says, no, I tithe $10,000 a month. It's fine. We're going to be fine. He says, are you mad? We're on a desert island. There's nothing. We're going to die. And the chap sips his coconut juice and says, I tithe $10,000 a month. My pastor will find me. He says. And, you know, do not let your left hand, so give romantically, This leads me into my next point, which is give instinctively. Don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so your giving would be done in secret. It's kind of instinctive giving. Does that just happen randomly, that suddenly, oh, I'm giving? I don't think so. I think generosity and giving happens through discipline and learning. Kind of standards and ways that are like just like spiritual exercises train us in godliness and in prayer. So in giving, there are ways to train ourselves. And the Bible teaches as a sort of basis the tithe, giving a tenth, not as a law, but as a guideline, a kind of basis for living and giving. Proportional, regular, generous giving. And I remember when I first read this in the Bible, and I thought, I said to Anita, we're going to tithe. And it was, I felt a severe pain in my wallet and in my bank account because, I was in my first job as a teacher. We'd just bought our first house. We were having our first baby, and there was not enough money to pay for everything that we needed to live on, let alone to give 10% of my small teacher's salary to the Lord through the local church. But we just felt convicted by the word, really, and read these things about giving in secret and so on, and began gradually to get this discipline of tithing. And, you know, my testimony is that the rewards are massive. Tithing, you know, what does that mean? It means if you're earning £12,000 a year, which some students might be, or no, you will be giving £100 a month, £1,200. If you are earning £24,000, you will be giving £200 a month. Am I right? If you're earning £120,000, you'll be giving £1,000 a month. That's what it means. And that's what it will look like in your bank balance. And I believe that, or you may be giving it into a tithing account. And then you will be instinctively, your left hand won't know what your right hand is doing, because you've learned that the one who sees in secret rewards you, and it becomes part of your lifestyle. Jenny Kaur, in her little letter to pastorates, said, you know, this church, people give about £1 million in this church a year. It's absolutely extraordinary. It is a miracle. There's incredible generosity, for which I thank God. Partly because of kind of people desiring to get their lives according to the word of God. And she says, how many people, so 60% of the finances come from monthly standing orders, 20% comes on gift days, 15% comes from one-off donations made by transfer, and 5% from the weekly collection. So only half our income arrives in a regular, predictable manner, which makes life complicated if you have a staff team. How many people give? Roughly 220 people or families give regularly by standing order throughout the year. Compare that to 358 people on the electoral roll and over 1,000 adults attending church during term time. We have a high turnover of members, so each year about 20 new people or families start to give and about 20 existing givers leave. How much do people give? Well, there's a graph here that I haven't been efficient enough to put on the screen, but almost half of these gifts were for £100 or less per month. And she says it's important to be clear on the message here. Jesus teaches us that in God's kingdom, the widow's mite is highly valued, i.e., it isn't the size of the gift that matters, it's the attitude with which it's given. And many of these lower gift levels will be as much as people can afford, and they are therefore a significant act of worship in God's sight. However, She continues, it does seem a little surprising just how many donations there are of this size. What does it say about our attitudes? Are we taking our financial giving seriously? Are people thinking and praying about tithing? So this is, I believe, the way to instinctive giving. And we do actually have a goal this year of finding 50 extra standing orders among you, as discipleship, really, and especially, I believe, among the 6 p.m. service. It's usually the morning service that supports the church. But if you're in your first job, or you're, you know, if you're, you've begun to earn regularly, have you begun to give regularly? Have you got a standing order to your church? Not to us, but to him through your church. Maybe you are one of the 50 who tonight will decide to have a love relationship and be give precious secret gifts to God, which I won't know about it. One person in our finance department may know about it. And to begin a lifestyle that when you, you know, suffer trouble or go into turmoil, you will know that your life is right with the Lord. And it suggests, this verse, a spontaneity that's approved by God, but it's a kind of characteristic of generosity, like Grady Reed, who I was talking about in this CLC church. John Bunyan said, you haven't lived today until you've done something for someone who can never repay you. John Wesley said, do all the good you can by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as ever you can. Winston Churchill said, we make a living by what we get, we make a life by what we give. So this suggests, having money, it's good to spread it around. Francis Bacon said, money is like manure, of very little use except it be spread. So that's the second thing. Spontaneous giving that probably comes out of a discipline of giving. The first thing was a love affair. The third thing in this passage is about giving to the needy. The passage assumes you will give to the needy. It says, when you give to the needy. And I'm so glad that Phil was on the platform talking about the work of ACT, which works amongst ex-prisoners. We have a person, a role that whose title is Meet at the Gate, who meets people when they come out of prison, and various other people, members of staff. I love that. I'm very keen for us to understand that the DNA of this church is to give to the needy. So I was looking at a memorial. The memorials are these things on the wall, that's what their name is, and it's a chap who was the master of Pembroke College and later became the Bishop of Bristol. And it says that when he was here, he bought a house, a property for £100, those were the days, and left it in trust for the poor of the parish. You can read it. And actually, through the generous giving of people hundreds of years ago in this place, we have stewardship, a charity that is associated, it's not our church, but it's another charity, of several houses on Pembroke Street, which are rented out, for example, to Commonwealth House, thanks to the gifts of these people. And part of the revenue for those houses is given to the poor. Last week, I had the pleasure of signing checks to the value of about £75,000 because the year's just started. Two things like Donington Doorstep, which, when, you know, St. Ebb's Primary School, who needed, you know, places and nothing to do with us, but some of them the work of ACT. And all of that money comes from people who are dead. By the way, if you're about to die, make a will. And include this church in your will. You know, maybe you're not about to die, but you have made a will. You know, it, for me, it makes sense. It's just intelligent to join in the DNA of this church. Do not let past people shame us. Let us go further than them. in our giving. Give to the needy. That's what these people did. And of course, who are the needy? Well, they are the people I've referenced, but it is also true that one of the greatest needs in the world is to hear the gospel. And so when we do a mission to students, like happened in here every lunchtime this week with Michael Ramsden, who's a member of our church, speaking to hundreds of students, I came and saw what was happening. We have 3 student workers, 4 including our postgrads worker, and you, your generosity pays for those people who then give to the, who then serve the needy. And then we give to missions, especially in Europe. At the home weekend, in a couple of weeks' time, we have 2 of our people who are working in mainland Europe coming to just be interviewed and be with us, the Dantons and the Roma Seers. Amazing people, don't miss them. But our longing is that the empty cradles of Europe, her churches, would light up with a new generation of believers. There's such a need in Europe for church. Give to the needy. And when you give to the needy, don't let your right hand know what your left is doing. Fourthly, give to store up treasure in heaven. The way you store up treasure in heaven, said Rick Warren, is by investing in getting people there. So I do want to encourage what I call holy giving. Don't store up your treasure on earth. And at times I remember coming forward in this church or another church with a gift at a gift day, you know, which I just could not afford, humanly speaking, and just saying this is treasure in heaven. Do you know that? Do you know what that is like? It's so exciting, rewarding. Of course, all things come from him, and so we're only giving back to him what he's already given us. But I believe the offering should be a holy moment on Sundays. I, you know, often watch these baskets, which are far too big, I know, go round, and you know, there's a few coins in there, and I feel ashamed. And I know that that's because many, many are giving by standing order, and so they think, well, that's done. But I want to say, why not every week give a little bit more sacrificially? So that is a holy time. Let's have holy offerings that are treasure given into heaven. And lastly, your Father will reward you. You don't give in order to get money. That would be mercenary. But there are great rewards that are appropriate. You know, if someone gets married to get their husband's fortune, that is inappropriate. But if they get married to have their husband and to love him, that's an appropriate reward. And if he's wealthy, fine. It's an appropriate reward. And in the same day, as we give to God, we get a huge reward, which is God himself. It's to do with the doctrine of the abundance of God. Very often, we have a doctrine of kind of scarcity mentality instead of an abundant mentality. Samuel said this: God gives his people everything they need to worship him, to be his friends, to eat with him. But the church is so often dominated by scarcity thinking. This is a kind of thinking that responds to a great idea with a heavy heart. If only things were different, we would do it. PCCs and synods need to learn, Samuel says, and others. There's a great book called Barefoot Disciple about this that I recommend, to realize we have an abundant God. You know, when Jesus blesses the 5 loaves and the 2 fishes, and it's kind of Eucharistic almost, it's appropriate, and then he serves it out like that. The abundant God provides 12 baskets full of, and you know, there's far too much for everybody. And that is when a small boy is given a little, there is huge abundance. And may our discipleship thinking change so that we realize There is an abundant God to whom we are giving. Your Father who sees in secret will reward you. You know, I'm often telling, and I apologize for it, but it's, you know, it's very, very helpful for this talk. The story about a girl, a man who marries the daughter of a multi-billionaire Asian businessman. And he says to the son, what do you want for your wedding present? And the son replies, the son-in-law says, I'm very happy just with your daughter. And the father-in-law says, no, I really want to give you a present. And he thinks for a while what's appropriate. And he says, well, I've taken up golf. I'd like some golf clubs. Would that be okay? And the time goes by. The wedding doesn't happen for several months. And just before the wedding, the billionaire says, look, I'm working on your wedding present. I'm just so sorry I haven't given it to you yet. I've only been able to buy 2 golf clubs which have got swimming pools. You got that? Because the chap has got abundance. And the son thought it would be a little set of golf clubs, which would be nice in itself. But your Father is an abundant Father. He may not give it to you immediately, it may be later, he may not give you reward till you get to heaven, but there will certainly be massive reward. And in my experience, you get lots of signs of it. So, it's a love affair. Give in secret, give instinctively, which requires training, regular, proportionate, generous. Give to the needy. Give to store up treasure in heaven and be aware of the reward of a generous Father God. Let's have the band back. Just want to say a couple of things just to seal this. I believe to achieve this, we need deliverance, grace, and good habits. You may need deliverance from addiction to money, which is a spiritual thing that you can ask for prayer for. You may need grace. Paul said to the Corinthians, see that you excel in the grace of giving. It is a spiritual gift, and I've seen it come on people. You can come forward later on and ask for prayer. But also, we need discipline. Mark Twain said, habit is habit, and not to be flung out of the window by any man, but coaxed downstairs one step at a time. So you have to step by step by step learn to give. And, you know, it begins by thinking, begins by getting a leaflet. It goes on by filling it out. Then you have to actually hand it in, which is really painful. Then you have to contact your bank, and then you have to do it next month. And as you gradually learn the habit, it becomes instinctive.